We are not heroes, nor are we villains, neither kings nor magicians, but we can tell you their stories. We are the Lore Keepers, and we welcome you to Hallowmay.
Welcome to Hallowmay. This is Lore Keepers, the Boundless Venture, the world-renowned podcasting opus, wherein the richest tapestry of lore in human history is being sung into being before your very ear holes. And you can take that to court. These are legally binding statements. And I'm Frank.
I'm Carter, and I do not agree with this legal binding.
Actionable, lawsuitable information here. Whether you melt jewelry in volcanoes, burn steel to usurp the Carrion Throne, or credit on your Grey Warden to kickflip, sit a while by our fire, O weary wanderer. Also other things probably trademarked and, you know, Mistborn, and let us weave you a tale.
What? Let's just say
so
things.
This week...
Yeah,
you can just say things. Lord of the Rings! We invented it. J.R.R. Tolkien is a liar. Fucking liar. He stole it from my family.
He stole it from my...
The Tolkien Foundation owes me millions. Billions, even. With interest.
Jesus. You know what? While we're at it, let's just piss off the village people, because I hear they're very litigious.
The village people? Yeah. As in, like, the YMCA
yeah.
folks?
They're very litigious.
Really? Yeah. I didn't know that. Well, we did invent YMCA.
Exactly. The Young that Men's also Christian Youth Association? What is it?
Young Men's Christian Association, okay. I think.
I added an extra Y in there.
I was thinking it's funny that that's like what it is, and like the village people has always been like super gay.
Yep.
I appreciate that. So this week we're doing something a little bit off the beaten path, in a way, but hey, in order to
we're beating the path off, you could say.
Yeah, we got to beat that path off, off our feet. You know, it's a sort of a footsie kind of situation, because we're walking on the path, yep. But it's also pseudo-sexual, and everything is sex. Everything.
Everything is content, and all content is sex.
All content is sex. Welcome to the internet. Breaking away from the traditional season structure for the first time in multiple years, I think, at this point. I guess we did Overoon, and then we did, so maybe it's like a year and a half or something like that. Because I think even season two technically, well, season two wasn't entirely Overoon. We didn't really center in on Overoon until like episode maybe 12 or 14 or something. But we're casting a much broader net this episode,
yep.
And this is maybe more of kind of like a teaser of things to come, of potentially what might we be exploring over the summer.
A net that traverses the cosmos.
Yes.
And it's unclear whether I used the Greek or the Latin word there, because they're pronounced the same.
Yes. We also got, I haven't responded to it, but we did get some questions from somebody over the Reddit, and there's been people who have been reaching out to us through email, and we've been kind of storing that stuff up. We're probably going to do a
for winter.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we're probably going to be doing a full episode next week. Where we focus on some of the questions that they ask. But there's some smaller questions that we figured we could probably answer with much shorter forms. So towards the end of the episode, we'll kind of just be quick firing some of the easy ones that I think we probably have direct answers to.
Yep, like Frank is not single, and I am. There you go.
Okay, well, that's... So, this episode, we're going broader. I don't really know how to transition away from what Carter said. But Carter specifically, You had an interest in doing things that were, as you said, just like planar.
I'm into the planes.
Having to do with the planes of reality, and we'll probably be coming back to a lot of that stuff over the course of the summer. But specifically, what were some of the things that you wanted to kind of bring back up and explore during this sort of mid-season period?
So typically, when we're doing more focused work, we ignore some of the more broad strokes. And a part of that is the different planes of reality other than the materium, other than the material plane, which most of the stuff happens.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's just a kind of, that falls out of our focus, focusing mm-hmm. on, you know, cities or nations or continents rather than focusing on different planes or focusing on the cosmos as a whole or focusing on the divine, you know. Different focuses right. call into, you know, focus different planes. And so I just wanted to take the first episode here of our transitory season into the new mm-hmm. season to hearken back to some of the stuff we've said about the planes, talk about, you know, as we are, our world being has progressed in rigor and sharpness. It's very sharp.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to...
Honed.
Yes, I want... It's very honed. It's like a fine blade cuts through mm-hmm. cheese.
Yeah. Yep.
And so I wanted to revisit...
The cheese of reality.
Some of our cheesy planes.
So yeah, maybe we start with just doing kind of an overview of what some of the planar activity is, because it's not something that we have talked about much in recent... I know it pops up occasionally, but like it doesn't necessarily... you know, show up all the time.
Yeah, I wanted to begin with a kind of categorization of what we have and what, okay. like, a typical, like, you know, oftentimes when I'm thinking of planes, I think of the, like, you know, bog standard kind of fantasy that comes in the box in a, you know, a D&D supplement kind of thing. And mm-hmm. what they referred to as the categorization of their planes. So we're talking... like inner planes, outer planes, transitive planes. You know, what are those? What do they mean? That, you know, that's kind of what I want to get into. And like, what does it look like in Helome to have these? Like, where do our categories go in there?
Yeah. So the main ways the main ways that we can look at this is we can start by looking at. The relationship between some of the first planes and kind of just build in as they were either discovered or as they fit into kind of the cosmological or cosmographical, maybe is a better word for it, picture of how people interpret the world of Helome, like the people who would live within it. So as a little bit of a setup, the reason why I created Helome, as most world builders end up creating worlds, or not most, I shouldn't say, but like many people might find this relatable.
I would say most world builders probably create worlds, but maybe not most people.
Oh, most people who create worlds. No, what I was trying to say was that many people who create worlds are doing it for a specific purpose, which That's is true. To run a tabletop game. That's not everybody. There's people who are just authors or who just like to do conlang or something. So they, you know, I mean, JR Tolkien is a good example of creating a world for the sake of having an excuse to create his own languages.
Yep.
Those people are very much real and super cool. It's just not something I could really grok.
It's just such a different kind of, you know, brain that can just spit out languages like madness. Mm-hmm. Like it's a beautiful thing. It really is.
But yeah, so as an answer to the Forgotten Realms and the way that those, like my understanding of D&D was very limited at the beginning. And so I wasn't really sure what was supposed to be there and what wasn't. So I did a lot of kind of mapping things on top of things. So mapping my, you know, the Helumian world on top of the Forgotten Realms, because I was like, well, I don't know how much of this is important to build in proper so that I can use D&D content. And of course, over the years, like we've departed so significantly from it, but the core still remains very similar. So in Halime, there are probably about 25 planes of reality that are on some level like relevant, which sounds like a lot, but they can be most of those can be grouped into two major categories. So you do have the Materium, which is, I guess, not one of those two categories, but it is the central, it is the nexus point. So it is where everything...
Midgard.
It can be seen as Midgard, or it is where most mortals live and reside, and everything that we talk about typically is happening in the Materium, which consists of a dimension of space, a universe, if you will, that includes stars and planets and... you know, Sidar, the planet on which like all of this stuff happens, and the moons and the other planets in the solar system, or I guess that would be the Yadelian system, because Yadiel, the sun, is also there, right? And it's also like it's called a nexus point because it also has magic flowing through it, and it reaches outwards into these other planes. So,
from
there, the two most important sort of zones of planes are the Ethereum and the Absentium. And there, so the Ethereum, to start, is not really one single place. It's the collective amalgam of realms that the Nine Flow flows through en route towards the Materium. In other words, it's basically, you can think of it as like the heavenly or the divine. You know, it's the place where the abstracts of own, the Nine Flow flows from and flows into reality. Then you have seven Absentium. And together, this is me sort of doing the positive and negative planes of D&D, except instead of there being essentially six positive planes and six negative planes and two neutral planes, there are nine positive planes and seven negative planes. There is a slight imbalance there, which I thought would be more interesting for creating tension and stuff. But I think that each of the Absentium might be more powerful than... It's complicated. They're not all perfectly equal. You know, it's not all a perfect balance. We're not looking at like a plate with, you know, a chopstick underneath the center of it and like, you know, 16 small balls on the edge or anything. Anyway, so you've got the Ethereum, you've got the Absentium, which that's where, when I was saying like 25-ish realms, that's where a lot of them are, is because each of those is technically its own plane of reality, but they're really gathered together and kind of cross over into each other a little bit. Then we have the Illuvium, and we have Orconis, which are kind of like their own version of... How would you describe that, Carter? It's not really positive and negative energy. One of them is overflowing with magic. But the other isn't necessarily like devoid of magic. It's more like the cast off of reality.
So, yeah, I would rate it by like the latent energy within each plane kind of thing. And so you have like the air is thick with magic in the Illuvium.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's a realm of frantic energy.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Orconis, it's more like dead air.
Yeah.
And so it's a slowness to the most of the world with small bits of kind of frantic pockets.
Yeah. Yeah, because magic is present, but it's more present in like the world than it is something that people use. Like vampires and werewolves and shit are very present in Orconis. You have eldritch strange like beings. They don't necessarily cast magic, but they are by their nature magical. The entirety of Orconis itself is, I believe, is it the dead body of the architect?
Yeah.
Or is it one of the Titans or something? Whatever we call them, the Renders and Vitals? Is it a dead one?
I think we decided that the architect created the Renders and Vitals, and so that they share features,
mm-hmm.
and that the architect...
I think it might be the dead body of the architect, that Orconis is built on.
The dead body, yeah, the dead body mm-hmm. is Orconis, yeah. In a strange fashion.
Right. And so there's not like, it's worth noting also that whereas there is sense of, you can kind of attribute that like quote unquote perfect balance to the Ethereum and the Absentium and the relationship to the Materium, and that, you know, it creates for a very poetic creation story, you know, like, you know, the ones that we see all the time with in Christianity or even Judeo-Christian origins. We see it within like the Vishnu, the Vishnu and and like Buddhism stories and things like good, evil, etc. Orconus and Alluvium are a little bit, they sort of have orange-blue morality, where Alluvium was created as a response where of the gods essentially like gifting it to humanity and like birthing the elves. That's where the elves come from, is they started out as fey creatures. Orconus, I believe we would have to go back. There's, if you're more curious about specifically these planes, you can go back to way on early. I think it's like episodes 13 and 14. We talk about each one of them in detail. But I think Orconus was actually formed kind of from the shadow. Oh, during the Ash Curse, it was that it was the part of Alluvium that was torn away and like lost its access to magic and stuff like that. But yeah, anyways. So those are that's Alluvium and Orconus. And there are other ones as well. I mean, we can talk about the Contour Realms too. Should we kind of just do an overview of each of those?
Let's hit up the Elemental Planes and then go to the Contour Realms.
Right. Okay. So yeah, so there is the Elemental Planes, which is the Primordium. This was the other sort of the third crucial, or this actually really the second crucial piece to creating the Materium. So as the creation story goes, Own basically took spirit and bound it to matter. And the two together created living souled beings known as the Knowing. The Primordium is a place of anima. So that's that energy we talk about sometimes, where essentially it is pure. You can think of it as almost like instinct, but instinct built into matter itself. And so the beings like elementals, when you think of like sort of like a water titan or, you know, a fire giant or something like that, where it's like a being that is made out of elemental power, those are beings that would reside within the Primordium. They operate, they have like complex, they're not exactly societies. The way that we always describe it is basically that it's as though if you were born with an innate knowledge of any caste systems that are relevant and like your role within society, as though knowledge was inbuilt with it, like as instinct. So they don't necessarily know that they're doing things, but it's kind of like a pantomime of culture and society. It was Own's first attempt at trying to create creatures like that.
Yeah, I would say that the closest parallel to them is very much, we go to instinct a lot, but almost like a very sophisticated computer that isn't sentient. It doesn't. It's not a thinking AI. It just executes programs.
That's a really good way of putting it. Yeah, like some of the really, really intelligent, quote unquote, robots that we create, they don't have proper AI, but they've been programmed with so many responses that, I mean, you could almost say it's got some of those Westworld vibes of like not quite indistinguishable, but almost indistinguishable from reality. That's not a perfect one because have you watched Westworld?
I've watched the first season.
Okay. Minor spoilers, but more sort of just like a metaphysical spoiler, I guess. Just skip forward a little bit if you don't want to hear it. It turns out that basically the robots of Westworld, the hosts, are basically like more complicated and better programmed than humans are. Like
they're more sophisticated.
Humans, in their language, like in the programming language that would be used to describe the hosts, humans are only like 500 lines of code, whereas the hosts are like tens of thousands or millions of lines. So yeah. Anyways, but yeah, so the Primordium is basically just a place where it's like, that's where matter comes from. That's its origin point. You can kind of think of it as being related to Platonic forms and the idea of sort of being a seed or a source place that matter comes from and then is made real by reality.
I'm going to push back against the form talks because the forms are pretty abstract. The forms are closer to the nine flow than they are to the
elements. That's probably true. I lean on those way too often to describe things. Anything that's kind of esoteric or hard to grasp, I'm like, oh, you know, it's like Platonic forms. No, man, not really. Yeah, that's fair. Okay, so, I mean, yes, we talked about those. There are other, there are contour realms as well. Was there anything else before the contour realms that you wanted to mention?
I think we visited most. I think we could say a couple things about the Howling Void.
Yes, that I think would be, we should also, so the Howling Void, Locus, which I guess is...
Contour realm.
I guess is technically a contour realm, yeah. We could talk about the Gloom, but nah, that's getting too much into the weeds. Somnus is kind of important. And I think, I mean, that's all the ones that are listed here, but then we also have, yeah. We have Skyris too, but that's another weird one. That's like Staraka.
Yeah.
So I think we can hold off on that for now. But yeah, the Howling Void, yes. So when the Ash Curse happened, which is basically just sort of like the fall, the end event, the Howling Void, I guess kind of, well, this is the weird thing. It didn't exist then because it doesn't ever exist because it's non-existence. It's like the nature of not existing. It's a void, yes. And so it didn't not exist then is maybe how I would say that. But it has always been there, but it's always... No, it hasn't always been there, but it has always not been there.
Yes.
And when the Ash Curse occurred, the Nameless One was thrown out into the Howling Void. And basically, because Own cannot unmake things, the closest thing that they could do, because their nature is a creator, the creator, is to remove it from existence.
You put it in the playtest box out of the...
Yeah, basically. Yeah, put them in the sandbox at 000 XY coordinates and just like an open nothing.
And at the time, oh my gosh, the void wasn't so howling.
I don't know if that's coming through.
Is that a cat?
Maisie with her head in a croissant bag. Yes, yeah.
Okay.
That's Maisie with her head stuck in a croissant bag. That's good. Really likes the croissant bags. She gets them stuck on her head all the time. It's very funny. Sorry, I was very distracted.
At that point in time, the Howling Void wasn't so howling, and it gets its name from the wails of the uncreations of the Nameless One as they, you know, go about shaping unreality to their whims.
Yes. Yeah, we actually touched on this in recent episodes of kind of articulating what exactly is going on. Essentially, you can kind of think of it as because the Nameless One is a made thing, a creature that exists, it being in the Howling Void, this sort of a matter-antimatter thing that releases a ton of energy. The Nameless One then uses that energy to shape the unreality, or sort of like the corrupted mixture of the two, into these monstrous creatures that are... that then results in sort of... They are the father of curses, the entity that has then made every single living eldritch being, or unliving. I don't know. They have not exactly like a normal life cycle.
Abominable.
Yeah, kind of. I think of them as kind of like the Necrons of Dead Space, where they don't have like a proper life and death cycle, or that they like come back to life after they die. Because they just are doing different shit.
You mean the Necromorphs?
Oh, sorry, yeah. Not the Necrons. Necrons are 40K.
Yeah, I'm like, you mean the metal space Egyptians?
Are Necrons also... They're not alive, though,
yeah,
I don't
think. Because they're in, like, they're soulless beings imprisoned in metal bodies.
Right, yeah. That's what it is, yes.
Though I will say that some of them have souls, or, like, some of them have minds. Maybe.
Yeah, they like worship the star gods of like Catan and
Well, they
stuff.
Used to.
Oh, they don't anymore?
No, they hate them because the Catan tricked them and put them into the metal bodies and enslaved
them. Oh, that's right. Yes, and enslaved them. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Who even the like Catan and the other star gods, they like were not actually the chaos gods though, right?
They're different. Like the Catan are like they were like weird cloud beings that ate stars, and then they were put into like super powerful like sexy bodies by the Necrons.
Wait, sorry, why sexy? Just sexy in the way that, like, an iPod, like a shiny new iPod, is like the sexy new product.
I think it's sexy.
Jesus, is this 2004?
Sexy
that I'm like
as
saying
in new,
an iPod is a sexy,
but also sexy
new
as in like powerful. You know,
oh, okay,
you got that
sure,
powerful,
sure, sure.
Sexy appeal.
Power is sexy.
Exactly. Everything is sexy. Everything is content. Power is content. Therefore, power is sexy.
My favorite position is girl boss.
All right,
CEO. Fuck. Okay. So anyways, yeah, we've got the Howling Void. There are the Contour Realms, which are not realms in proper. They're not really like a realm of reality as much as a way of observing reality. So there are a few more here. Last one that actually is technically a realm is Locus. And we had a little bit of a like sort of a stirring up of that pot a couple of, maybe it was last episode or maybe it was two episodes ago, where we realized it might not look like, it might look more like webbing than actually like a proper flat, smooth, you know, plane, which I don't know how that stuff, like, I don't know how you even map that, but like, because it's more like rivers, where what Locus is, its role is to carry magic from the Ethereum and down into the Materium, or really bleed it out into all planes of reality where it's relevant. So like, for instance, the Primordium doesn't actually get any magic. The Alluvium gets far more magic than it's supposed to. And I think Orconis is more like the dustbin where some of it ends up when it's not intentional. But you also have Somnus, and I think Somnus and Locus are, yep, that's right, they are related. So they have sort of an hourglass relationship with each other. Locus, there is sort of, you can kind of think of it as a, there's three dimensions of like up, down, left, right, forward, back in both Somnus and Locus. There is sort of a fourth dimension of depth. That is how far into the plane you travel, which I don't think most mortal beings can really perceive in that direction. But the deeper that you travel into Locus, eventually you reach this sort of like this inflection point where everything that would travel that direction goes through that one point and then comes out somewhere in Somnus as you sort of ascend levels. So they do have a relationship with each other, and the same is true for Somnus going the other way. Somnus is the realm of the dream. It is where your unconscious mind goes when you sleep. It's kind of split into two different areas, which I'm not going to get too much into that, but that's Nauseum and Praxium, which are basically, Nauseum is like a night sky peppered with stars. And Praxium is more like a land that people can walk across. Yeah, there's more to it. There's a lot more to it than that, but we got to keep trucking here.
Yeah, so I think there's one plane we kind of missed out on.
Which one?
Osteos.
Well, Osteos isn't its own thing. It's part of the Absentium. I did want to come back around to that, but I wanted to kind of do an overview of like the body part metaphor.
Yes, okay.
First. Just to blaze these last couple, Skyris is a contour realm, doesn't technically exist, but it is basically like psychics who or people who are like psionic, they have the ability of enacting mental powers, can sort of map what they see with like pinpricks of light of where people's minds are in space. And that can be warped by more mentally active minds. But so like very big, powerful, like Illithid brains or whatever are going to warp the Skyris around them to show up as being more visible from further away. And then there's a lot of other like smaller dimensions. You've got paradimensional stuff with magnificent mansions, or you have Storaco, which is the infinite city.
Demi planes.
Yeah, yes, no, you're right, because the gloom is technically paradimensional, but that's its own whole thing. We're not going to get into that right now. You're right, demiplanes. Yeah, they're like smaller bubbles of planar, like that are sort of like tape, you know, floating a little bit more free.
Yeah, like as you said, Magnificent Mansions, or like maybe bags of bigness. What are they called?
Oh, bag of holding.
That's the one. Bigsby's big bag.
Big trash bag.
They kind of have a demiplane attached to them.
There's also Tontus, which is kind of like the Outlands, but that's like not the Outlands of WoW, but that's I don't think we can talk about that right now. I think I was in a fever when I came up with that one.
Tontus is Frank's fever dream.
I mean, all of this basically is, but
I am for sure just a figment of Frank's fever dream.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you all are, yeah. You know, it's disreality, you know. Okay, so to wrap back around to what Carter wanted to get into with Ostios. So Ostios is one of the seven essential planes. And the reason why I wanted to give it a second before we got back to it was to just sort of, we have talked about this in the past, but it might be a long time since you've heard this. And when you were looking at the cosmography of Halume, you can kind of treat it like a sentient being, or maybe not even necessarily a sentient being, but an entity with a character. That was my intent. That was kind of what I was playing off of with Own, making reality in their own image, because they are an entity with a character that is on some level defined. The things that they make must be somehow of themselves. Like, they can't make things that aren't of themselves. So Halume then, following kind of that philosophical train of thought, also then has a character because it is like sired by a creator.
Yeah, it's kind of like how if you ever look at buildings, they're all just either dicks or breasts.
Sure. I mean, everything is either a straight line or a curved line, so you can really extrapolate that one outwards. But the Bingo. Fact that we see dicks and breasts in everything is maybe more, I think, where that truth lies. Okay, but so with that, Halume can be seen as kind of like a body made up of body parts, which, you know, at least that is sort of like how the sages and lore keepers over Avum have observed it, and different whether it's, you know, there's maybe a chicken or egg situation in terms of meaning and implied meaning of like, did Own intend it this way, or is this just us reading it this way? I think that that's, you know, subjective, and that is interesting to explore, but ultimately the point is that Ostios, we have a few different planes that we've explored like this: Anastasia, Ostios, I think there's a couple others as well. Yeah, they play different roles of like parts of the body. So Ostios is the bones of creation. It's oftentimes referred to it as that, which the absentium in its entirety is seen by like the philosophers and things as being like the corporeal parts of the body, sort of the shade cast. And the mind is sort of made up by the different parts of the Ethereum. But yeah, so, and actually, this is sort of the not season of relitigating things, right?
Yeah. So yeah, there. I mean, there are some things that fall out of that are a little bit unfortunate, but you know, mm-hmm. in line with many Christian ideologies of be ashamed of your body. Your body's bad, but your mind is good.
I mean, that wasn't really where I was going with that, but I mean, maybe that's reading into something that's maybe there. I don't know.
Yeah, that's an unfortunate consequence of this thing, but you know, there you go.
Is there something specific that you wanted to bring up with Ostios?
Yeah, I wanted to bring up how it functions as the ethereal plane in our cosmography.
It doesn't, though. I've said this many times before. Locus is the ethereal plane.
Yes, Which is why I was thinking to go into what a transitive plane is. Because we've talked about locus, you can't actually, like, it's not a place.
It is.
It is a place.
Yeah, no, you can, well,
we
I
just
mean,
said it wasn't.
You can astrally project into it in the same way that you can astrally project into the ethereal plane.
Yeah, but your body doesn't go.
No, but your body also doesn't go into the ethereal plane. When you astrally project, it does not go into the ethereal
plane. That's because
plane.
You astrally project into the astral plane, not the ethereal plane.
Oh, okay.
The ethereal...
Well, okay, here's the thing. In the past, I have portrayed locus as being, like, traversable space.
Yes.
And it has served that role for kind of, like, space fantasy. Like, you could have sort of spacefaring vessels that travel through locus and have economies and things on, like, floating chunks of, like, stone and stuff. I mean, it's where the what's it called people are from, the psionic peoples.
That
the Githyanki and the Githzerai.
So this
they
is
both reside.
This
in
is
locus.
Why I want to pull this apart, because there are two transitive planes.
Okay.
In the D&D Forgotten Realms kind of cosmology.
Oh, you're
there's
right.
There's the
there
astral
are.
Plane and the ethereal plane, and they're different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's you astrally project or you cast, you know, plane shift and go to the astral plane, you can go there. And then mm-hmm. if you cast etherealness or project yourself, or it's not project, it's it plane shift yourself into the ethereal plane, you can go there. The astral plane is a realm of, like, the intellect, and you can fly around using your mind.
You're right.
But the ethereal right. plane is more akin to you just walk around, and everything is, like, you know, misty. And you can use the border ethereal to go to every other plane.
I guess, I mean, that really does sound like Ostios.
Exactly. That's why I wanted it to be that. And then the astral plane sounds more like locus.
It is a plane out of phase. It is a place of ghosts and monsters. It is right next to you, and you don't even see it. That is in reference to the ethereal plane.
Yeah, and there's two parts of the ethereal plane, which I think can correspond and help us make Ostios fit in it, is that there's the border ethereal, and then there's mm-hmm. the deep ethereal. Or I forget exactly what it's called, but something like that.
Interesting.
The deep ethereal is the realm of... is in Ostios, and it's the realm of tears. It's his, basically his demiplane. His plane of existence.
Okay.
And then the border ethereal corresponds to the rest of Ostios, which is, you know, connected intimately to tears, the heart of you know, tears' realm. But you use Ostios to get to all other planes.
Is that tears?
Yeah, Tears has his demiplane, the Heart of Ostios. Tears, the Lord of Fear. Seventh of the Seven Mutes.
Right. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Right. Because the deepest parts of... Well, and they're also maze-like. So are you thinking that there are maybe parts of Ostios that have not... The corruption hasn't grown into entirely yet that people can use to travel?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that... it might be the kind of thing of, like, there are our version of the border ethereal is more scary, more creepy, and more, you know, devilish or demonic, more fiendish, we can say. But I think that, like, if you go to any of the hells or the abyss, there's just demons or, all right, devils or demons, respectively. Everywhere. And I think it's not the same with Ostios. If you go to the deep Ostios, to Tears' realm, yeah, there's devils and demons everywhere. But if you're on the surface of Ostios, trying to get to other planes, you might come across devils or demons. You might come across other travelers. You might come across even like the occasional angels, maybe, or elementals. But it's less congested with demons and devils.
Okay.
Beans.
Okay. Yeah, I think I kind of like the idea of there being these way towns that are close to this quote-unquote surface of Ostios, where they're run by fiends or whatever who do very, like, very small payments you have to give them of maybe not your soul, but like a month of servitude or something for like travel expenses, as being like, we'll get you from here to here and make sure that your, you know, wagon doesn't get destroyed or whatever.
It's like the border crossing smugglers in Mexico. They're like, look, we can get you in the United States.
I mean, I was going to say more like Charon, but it's not really Charon either, because they're not ferrying you to the world of the dead. Although that would be how you get there, would be traveling through Osteos. Question. So I had a thought. This actually kind of ravels into something that I was thinking earlier, and we got super waylaid. Well, we're relitigating things. We have talked about the Ethereum as being like purely mental. There are 9 ethereal realms, and each one of them is meant to correspond to one part of the Enneagram. That was like how it was originally designed. The Enneagram is divided into mind, like mental, emotional, and instinctual responses or ideals. And the instinctual responses have always been like associated with the body, not the head or the heart. I think head and heart we could kind of like, you know, sort of have in these, describe in these ethereal ways. I kind of like the idea of it being an imperfect picture of the physical, quote unquote, corporeal parts of Halume not being perfectly divided between absentium and ethereum, but that there are some parts of the ethereal realms that are still seen as parts of the body that aren't broken or like are still functioning well. Here's where I'm going with this. What if we had something that was one of the ethereal realms was essentially the equivalent of like the circulatory system? Maybe something like that. The picture that I'm imagining is like as though the creature living in the materium is like living on the skin, the epidermal layer. And in order to get to the bone isn't directly beneath the surface. There's layers of tissue and like capillaries and things that you'd need to quote unquote burrow into to actually reach osteos. And I'm kind of wondering, it's like, I wonder if there's almost like a partner realm that isn't as corrupted as the bones of osteos, where it's maybe, what if there was a realm of how, of the Ethereum that was failing, it was weakening over time. And like, there was no telling like how long it was going to be before it was fully like corrupted, but that had been touched in some sort of battle or something at one point, and that it was seen as either the muscle tissue or like the capillaries or something. So it's like, there's this realm where it's like, yeah, you have a little bit more safety, but also things are kind of like in this mournful light where like the sky is maybe always sort of overcast and in twilight or something. You know, I don't know. What do you think about everything I just threw out there? That was a lot.
That is interesting. I'm not sure, because we'd have to associate it with one of the 9. Mm-hmm. What are they called? Regents.
It'd have to be associated in a way where the regent, their throne hasn't lost any power, but their realm has weakened or something. And that the abstract itself hasn't really been touched or tainted, but the realm, there's maybe a foothold that the, you know, the fiendish creatures have like taken for their own or something, which, yeah, I'm not entirely sure how I feel about that.
Yeah. I feel like I'm not sure how it would work, because I feel like the demiplane that the regent is on, the regent's own power and the abstract the regent represents are all very closely tied, and to have one be like failing without affecting the others just doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah. What if it's a different thing? What if it's, so our blood carries away, you know, deoxygenated blood cells, right? Half of it is for respiration, and the other, I mean, well, all of it's for respiration, but half of it is for taking the good stuff that we need into cells, and the other half is for taking like urea and deoxygenated waste away from cells, so that, you know, blood cells can be re-respirated or whatever to take carbon dioxide away. Yeah. Right. What if the capillary or like artery plane had this situation where it actually kind of traversed, it was still technically seen as like it's functioning properly. So it was actually still like the redeemed, or not even redeemed, but like it was not affected. It is still a good physical body plane. But because of the fact that what it is doing is taking away waste or darkness, it's almost like sifting through the light and the dark and removing some of the negative. And so, I mean, I don't know how we interpret that. Like, as are there fiends on that plane? I don't think so, but there could still be negative energies that people are meant to stay away from.
It almost reminds me,
I don't know. And
of...
all of this is like, you know, yeah, I don't know if any of this is actually helpful for us here.
Do you know the rivers of the underworld in Greek myth?
I mean, I know of the river Styx. I don't know what any of the other ones are. I know there's like, what, five total?
There's five. So you know at least the number. There's the Acheron, the river mm-hmm. of woe, the Cocytus, mm-hmm. the river of lamentation, the Phlegethon, the river of fire, the Styx, the river of unbreakable oath by which the gods took vows, and the Lethe, which is the river of forgetfulness.
I like that woe and lamentation are two different things.
And then there's the river of fire, so it's like, okay, very abstract stuff. Then, mm-hmm.
and then
fire,
just fucking, it's fire.
And then
yeah.
the even more abstract and specific, which is there's this river Styx, the gods take oaths on it, it's very special. Mm-hmm. And then there's the river forgetfulness.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you shouldn't take the oath and then dip in the forgetfulness, because that's just a problem.
Right, because then you won't be able to remember to keep your oath.
Yeah, which is unbreakable. So you just be like, why can't I eat this brownie? Oh, no.
that's your oath?
Yeah, you not eat brownies. Nice. Yeah.
Don't eat brownies. Don't do it. Yeah, I mean... I don't know. That's an idea. I'm not necessarily holding too tight to that. I think it's just the idea of.
But what I was saying with this is that maybe there are rivers that represent what you're kind of getting at. And there's like the river of, you know, happy fun times. And then there's the river of like sadness. And then there's the river of like anger or whatever. And like these negative.
It's sanguine. Quite literally, like, the term sanguine yep. comes from that kind of shit. Is like, that's the stuff that makes up life. It's real.
Maybe.
It's the good and the
bad. And so that way we can get a kind of metaphor for the circulatory system without the, like, weird, gross body horror stuff where we have rivers.
I mean, well, fuck. Then this actually, I don't think this actually can be the physical body part of it, because I think this has to be muse, which is creativity and newness and the idea of emotion and all of that stuff like comes out of muse. So maybe that's just muse's realm. You know, if that's the case, that's fine. We can figure out the living and dead matter body stuff later. I'm not beholden to any specific number.
Yeah, it's just the problem. The problem is that almost all the regions, I think I may want to go further and say all the regions represent very minded things. Even the ones that are meant to represent the part of the Enneagram that's more about instinct, that's more bodily, is still a brain thing.
It's still ultimately about choices that you make with your head, which yes, even at its core, I mean, yeah, it's maybe just like parts of the body that are more closely related to cognitive function or something like that. But because there's a part of your body that tells your heart to beat, right?
The vagus nerve.
I mean, it's. Can't you stop your heart with your brain if you had access to that part of the autonomic functions?
Yeah. I mean, you, it's the brainstem, yeah. I guess.
Yeah, I don't remember. But, I mean, you know, maybe that's part of it. Who knows?
But it's like you can also give yourself a fever. And like, yeah, I mean, if you had access to things you don't have access to, you could theoretically do things.
Have you seen Lucy?
I haven't.
Okay, it's a movie with... oh, fuck, what's her name? She plays Black Widow. She's gorgeous. Yeah, Scarlett Johansson.
She's a very attractive woman.
Yeah. It's like classic story, like sci-fi story of somebody who gains access to all 100% of their brain power, and she's able to like fucking do telekinesis and is like deteriorating or whatever.
I think I saw it, and it's just like bad.
It's a fun as hell movie, but it's super silly and corny because like that's not how accessing all of your brain works. People say like you only have access to 3% of your brain. Your brain's very active most of the day. It's just the majority of it is used for subconscious information or making sure that your heart beats correctly or, you know, I don't know, delivering the right nutrients to the right parts of the body. It's executive function, you know, it's just saying, hey, work properly, body.
Also, you do use 100% of your brain. It's just 100% of your brain is not for thinking and you don't think with like even the part of the brain that is for thinking, like you use different parts of it for different kinds of thinking. So if you used all of it at once, you'd just be thinking about like everything at once, which is not how minds work.
Yeah. Aren't you happy that you don't have to tell your nose to properly interpret or like your brain to properly interpret signals from your nose based on chemoceptors? Yeah. That's your brain doing its job. It's it's expressing that part of itself.
It's like when you see a fire hose or maybe not a fire hose, just a regular garden hose. And you're like, holy fuck, a snake. And then you look and you're like, okay. It's not a snake.
Mm-hmm.
But you have that. You know,
yeah, before you actually interpreted that information, your brain was like, caution, danger, might be a snake. Yeah.
Do you want to have to label that? Then like go over it again and be like, oh, fuck, it's not a snake, not again.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyways, I mean, I think we're getting a little close on time here, actually. But yeah, so... There's a lot more that we can do with planes than just that. And honestly, this is as much a call to action as anything else. Feel free to send us your stuff on if you have any thoughts on how the planes work or any questions you might have, because we went through a lot of it pretty quick. I think you're right. I like the idea of Ostios being a place of travel or sort of a connector between all planes and the fact that it's kind of corrupted. I will say, I think... I do like the idea of having different ways of accessing that stuff, though. And maybe it's not as easy to reach some planes through Ostios or some places in some planes through Ostios as others in the same way that your bones and your blood are doing very different things and accessing different parts of the body.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's an easier-ish situation to be traveling through, you know, Muse's land or whatever. And other times you actually do need to go to Ostios.
I imagine it's difficult to get to the upper planes through Ostios, but to get to the other hells or to get to like the elemental plane or the alluvium or the Orconus, it might be easier.
Yeah. We're not gonna map that all right now, but I think you're right. I don't think that Muse's plane bleeds into reality in the same way that Ostios does. Like Ostios, you know how in like Dante's Inferno he literally just like finds a cave and then from there travels into the
very
hells.
Greek, by the
I've
way.
Always viewed Ostios as yes I've always viewed Ostios as kind of like that. It's just like there are, it's not easy to find them, and you might have to be doing a little bit of magic stuff. There might be some spans protecting it or whatever, but there are places where you can sort of step in, you know, you can cast spells to do it. You can do plane shifting and stuff to get to Ostios, but you can also literally just stumble on a cave or whatever that literally leads, you travel far enough down and it leads into the hells because it just doesn't stop going.
Yeah, and you know, you might ask the question, why do we need this kind of
bones of the earth?
Why do we need this kind of plane when all you need to do is, you know, snap your fingers if you're magic enough and get to any plane? The answer is, well, reality is connected to one, you know, reality is connected by reality. So we like to have this kind of underpinning, but also in order to, in D&D, in order to get to one plane to another, you need to have a tuning fork that is tuned to the frequency of the plane that is your destination.
Yes, this is something that I don't know exactly how that works in D&D, but this is something I definitely... have implemented in my own campaigns and stuff. We have implemented where you need a harmonic frequency, and it's basically like you can kind of think of it as sort of, this is me pulling now from the CW's Arrowverse or whatever. It's like the frequency that reality is vibrating at. Like all of reality vibrates at different frequencies, and if you know that frequency, then you can hop to it. But if you don't have that, then you can't just travel across the plains that way.
So it's basically like the plane's telephone number. You're calling it up and you're just like being stuck through the phone.
It's a Stargate. Yeah, but exactly.
Also, this is might, you know, be reasons for why people feel elation when they're on the upper planes, which is, you know, it's because the harmonic frequency does certain, you know, weird stuff to their bodies that they like. But maybe also why people can feel dread in the lower planes, because it's like a baser frequency. So it's just like, I don't know, going to a metal concert.
Carter, I don't know if you've been thinking that or if you just pulled that out your ass now, but like, I fucking love that. I've never heard that before.
Yep, that is,
I really like that.
Hot off the presses, straight out of Carter's ass.
Like, you can literally associate it with like major or minor keys or something.
Bam.
Oh, that's fun. I mean, that you want to talk about stuff that is straight up very like Greek. I mean, the early philosophers, like Aristotelian stuff, they were fascinated with the music of the spheres and the idea that there were different like chords or octaves or, you know, frequencies that things like vibrated at or resonated at. So
it's true.
All right. Well, I think we're going to close out here. But before we do, we got a couple of questions from one Gonzo Black Panda on Lore Keepers. I'm going to cherry pick a couple of these and just sort of edit the air around it here. I think we're just going to go one by one on some of these. We are selective. Gonzo Black Panda, if you're listening to this, we're selecting a couple of them that we're actually just going to answer improper later. So if you're wondering why we haven't addressed those, that's why. So they say, in preparation for the summer, I've been listening to previous episodes and had some questions and ideas that I think would be really interesting to revisit. My first big question was, is there any relation between the Admirals Club in Padasadi, the Ratcatchers of Everast, and the Outriders of Rorun? They all serve a somewhat similar function in that they deal with threats or adventures most normal people don't, while also being heavy partiers. I think I would probably just say I don't think so. I sorry if that is not a very exciting answer. I think that they're related more in their role than they are in any sort of communicative way. Like, Arun has basically no contact with the rest of the world, and the Ratcatchers were existing in a previous Avum than the Admirals Club. Even if they did exist at the same time, I don't know if they'd necessarily would. They'd maybe do, I could imagine them doing odd jobs for each other. Potentially, like, the Ratcatchers doing things for the Admirals, but the Admirals aren't really adventurers. They're just ship captains.
Yeah.
Which, they're more like merchants oftentimes.
Yeah, I would say that they are fulfill a slightly similar role in that they are kind of adventurers. And the ship captains, in some sense, are the odd ones out, but they're still, like, I imagine the Admirals Club has association with the vampire hunters and the monster hunting ships. I think they are associated with the
Admirals. I think we've even talked about that too.
Absolutely. And so that's how the Admirals Club kind of gets in on the same sphere as the Outriders and the Ratcatchers, because the Ratcatchers are in some sense not as necessary as the Outriders. The Outriders of Rune are like a massive part of the society. The Ratcatchers are like, you know,
they saw a niche and then they were like, hey, we can market
this.
We can turn this into a business for ourselves.
And then the Admirals.
But there might be rat catchers that are causing as many problems that other rat catchers are then hired to seal up as they are, you know, solving problems.
And then the Admirals Club is first and foremost a mercantile organization meant to represent the interests of merchant captains, but also, you know, in its goal of representing the interests of mercantile captains, does adventuring stuff or sponsors adventuring activities to make sure the seas are safe.
Yes. Right. And I think, I mean, in both of the first two examples, the Ratcatchers and the Admirals Club, it is definitely a situation where like they're in it for the money. And if it's not worth the money, they're not going to exploit it. Whereas the Outriders, they don't even have commerce in Orun. Like, the commerce is not an idea because the conceit of share with everyone so that all of us can survive. The more that the more that you give, the more that your bowl will be plentiful, you know, to quote The Expanse, Anderson Dawes, like that it's a, you know, yeah, they're just going to go and do the work because it's needed to be done. It's more like a, you know, I don't know, like a Landman Dragoran kind of vibe. I think we'd probably answer that one.
I
yeah.
Think so.
All right. I think we should skip over the next one because I feel like that could be its own whole episode.
It's too big.
Next question was just how aware of the different how aware are the different continents of each other? Do they interact in trading with each other? Has there or will there be a world war situation across all of Sidar, and what would that look like? So I don't think, I don't know, we've talked about this as sort of they're generally aware of lands beyond themselves, but that the further that you go, the less trade, the less stuff reaches there. I mean, I think every land is generally aware that it's maybe sees itself as being the center of the lands around it. You know, like we have Tsev, right, on the eastern edges of Everast, and Everast and Tanatlohi are pretty aware of each other. But like they hardly ever communicate with anything from the southern land, like the southern lands of Undara. Although, I mean, I don't know, maybe at some point we do explore that, because I could totally see traders or merchants sailing from the south to the north to offer their gifts or, you know, to trade stuff. But from the places that we've talked about with Padasari and the Marian Ocean and Orun, there's a big line drawn in the sand between those two. Orun is next to impossible to break into because of just how hazardous the environment is, and the fact that there's massive mountain ranges on the western coast that, like, some people live on one side of it, but it's very difficult to break through.
Yeah, and ocean currents are not friendly that way.
Right. And also, like, I mean, we have talked, though, about, you know, the Marian Ocean's relationship with the eastern, you know, the Baron Lords, but I don't think that there's people of Everest and Tanatlohi who have, there's probably maybe a couple thousand people from the Marian Ocean in Everast and Tanatlohi over the entirety of those two continents, and maybe vice versa. But it's a very, very uncommon, and I think only scholars and cartographers are generally aware with it. But maybe the scientific community is like aware of
how
it.
I kind of in my head explain Orun's isolation is, one, the people of Orun don't care about any of the other places because they're too busy trying to survive. And
I don't think most of them know what the entirety of Orun looks like, because it's so dangerous to map.
And two, I imagine that the kind of the ocean that separates Orun from Padasari and Orun from Everast, and, you know, the eastern coast of Everast where the shore barons are, I imagine that there is like this big kind of current that goes through the middle from Orun to
Padasari, but not the other way
around. So it's hard to get there, and that's just how the prevailing winds go as well. And then, like, looping back around, like, near the poles to the north and the south, there is kind of like a curve back, but it's just treacherous waters to the north because of the sea monsters, and to the south, I imagine maybe there's...
And a span. There's a massive span across a rift to the north as well.
And also to the south, I imagine there's just maybe there's ice sheets that cause problems, or...
So this is actually pretty close to the way that the currents are actually mapped. I don't remember the exactness of it, but I do remember, like, the way that I mapped it, but I do remember that there is quite literally less currents... Because you have both. When you get to the equator, currents will pass each other. That's just how winds work, and the winds drive currents. The currents that would take you towards Orun are more broken up by islands than the ones that take you home. Just that ended up how being how it shaked out. And I mean, yeah, and just when you get there, there's a ton of foreboding mountains. Everything's really isolated. It's violent. And also... magic is cystic when you get to Orun. Anything that you would be using to rely on magic, if you remember, magic is like corrupted and fails over time. So enchantments break down.
That's true.
Your ability to access magical spells is more limited. So unless you had somehow had built and designed and created things that would allow you to get there based exclusively on that, like you're not going to have a lot of chance to get to Orun. It doesn't mean that people don't do it. It's just it's extremely rare, and it's not like it can't be systematized. Like it can't be made systemic, where there's like a very easy way of doing it. Because I mean, like the elves of the Marian Dominion tried and they failed. It got really fucked up and bad, and they barely you know, made it through, you know, just classic example of, you know, conquistadors like trying to, you know, trying to claim lands for their own and then just getting sick and dying from all of the creatures there and stuff. As far as a world war situation, I mean, I think maybe across the known world that could potentially happen. I think that'd be a fun thing to explore. I mean, Avum Quartus is already kind of that. But Avum Quartus, not exactly, because World War was like two major fronts of like coordinated attacks against each other. Whereas, you know, Avum Quartus was a lot more like thousands of little warlords that were all trying to fight each other.
Yeah.
And then, I think maybe we save that last one for next week. Because it's a simple question, but I think we want to give that a little bit more time. So I think we call it for now. So thanks. Oh,
that's me. I'm courting a sneeze, but I think it's gone.
Okay.
Thanks for letting us be your escape. If you forgot your worries and you want to make others forgetful, we're in every podcasting service known to humankind. So don't be greedy. Share us with your friends.
Did we discuss something that was confusing as hell? Of course we did. We always do. But chances are that there's some context in the podcast description, so go there. You can also explore the subreddit or reach us at the Lorekeepers on Twitter or email us at lorekeeperspodcast@gmail.com for questions or things you'd like to hear in future episodes. Also, for what it's worth, it's been a little while since I updated the record of the Lorekeeper, as in, I think, more than a year. I think that's going to be changing. I can't make any promises, but I have been thinking about it a lot more, and it's something I really want to do, especially right now, as we are sort of bringing things back to the surface from ancient episodes. So don't expect anything for the last couple of years to show up in there, but I am literally going back at the beginning. Right now, I was re-listening to 2.5%, which is, I think, episode 12, and so it is relevant content, though. If you want to check that out, maybe peek, and by the time that this is up, there might be some new stuff for you to read.
You might also want to talk about your new project, The Record of the Arrowverse Keeper, where you
oh my god,
talk about and you know, just lore dump all on that, all over that page about the Arrowverse.
Carter is referring to the fact that I have been watching the CW's like cavalcade of shows in order. And I started, I think it was probably like 520 episodes of TV or something, is some about like 400 hours of TV. And I am currently in season 6 of The Arrow, season 3 of Supergirl, season 4 of The Flash, season 3 of Legends of Tomorrow. I also watched the now canceled Constantine, which is a crime against nature, a crime against humanity. And I don't know, there's more shows coming out. I'm excited for Black Lightning and Batwoman, but those will be, it'll be a little bit, I think, before I get to watch those. So, yep.
Glad to hear that. And thanks. Someone who's also glad to hear that is Josh Silker, the composer of Land of Heroes, which is Lorekeeper's theme. And so thank you, Mr. Silker. And also thank you to Sam Wade for the new album art. Still new.
Still new.
Still content.
Still content, still going up on my arm. Actually, I think by the time that this episode comes out, it might actually be on my arm. So if you are curious about that, check it out on Twitter. I decided it's going to go on my shoulder. Excited for that.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks. And until next time, don't forget, there are always more planes to navigate. I don't know.
Snakes on a plane.
More autonomic functions to cease because you've taken control of your brain power. Congratulations, you autotel. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. What? The newest season, or?
No, I'm listening to episode 3 of the original season.
It starts out kind of chunky. I always recommend that people just start with the Crystal Kingdom, but
I'm enjoying the There Be Gerblins.
Here There Be Gerblins?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good start.
Yep, I feel like you would have done me a disservice by telling me to start with Crystal Cave or whatever it was, Crystal Skull, Kingdom? Whatever. Because I would have missed out on Clark or his name's Clarm, maybe
Clarg. Yeah, Clarg the Bugbear. I mean, what I did is I started with Crystal Kingdom and then went back once I was invested in the story went back and listened to the rest of it, because I don't think it really starts to get good until...
I feel like Clarg was pretty good.
Crystal Kingdom. But there is fun stuff. The arcs of Murder on the Rockport Limited and Pedals to the Metal are both very good. I don't know. Yeah, you're just you're picking up some new content now that Campaign 2 is over, huh?
Yeah, I need more D&D-related content.
Yeah, I will. Once I finish this Arrowverse thing, I think I am going to go back
You're still engage on the Arrowverse train.
All right, now hang on for just a second. Think about this for a second. 10 years of professionally written, on some level, stuff that is acted and shit for... is about 500 hours of like TV shit. I have still about like 250 hours left. Versus thousands, literal thousands of audio of people rolling dice and talking. I'm not saying I don't enjoy Critical Role, but I am saying it ebbs and flows sometimes, and I got burned out. So. Yeah, no, I will pick it up again, though. It just requires more patience. We should clap. I will tell us when to clap. Because it is, it's in between seasons now. I mean, we could just, it doesn't matter, but let's clap on 35. You're recording, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. But yeah, you're liking the Here There Be Gerblins so far.
Yep.
Do you know that it's also a graphic novel?
No.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I don't need it to be. You know?
I don't think his name is Barry Blue Jeans in the graphic novel, but
it should be.
It might be. I can't remember.
And you should have like really absurdly blue jeans.
Yeah, yes. I think Griffin McElroy explained that where Barry Blue Jeans comes from is like, it was a name that he gave a lot of his like characters in video games because he always thought it was funny to have a character named Barry Blue Jeans be like the like legendary warrior who will save the world. It's a good name.
It is good.
It's a good podcast too. I mean, honestly, I think that might be their favorite campaign of mine. I stopped listening to the show somewhere in the second campaign. It's known as the Amnesty arc. Yeah. They're playing Powered by the Apocalypse, specifically Monster of the Week with that. And it was good. It was actually good. I didn't dislike it. I think the fact that I didn't know the mechanics super well took away from it a little bit. And the third campaign, a lot of people had problems with it. Seems like there's a lot of performative representation. And also, it sounds like Travis is maybe just not, because Travis runs that one, and it sounds like he's maybe not the greatest DM. He's introducing multiple characters every episode. Like literally like four or five new named characters every episode. And that sounds like a lot to keep track of.
They're all just slight variations on Barry Blue Jeans. There's like Harry Red Jeans, Larry
Gary jeans. Black Shorts. Yeah. Carl Red Pants.
Cloud French Pants.
But yeah, no, I don't know. Seems like it, you know, I do plan on eventually getting back on that train. It's just, these things are plotted. You know that I like talked about doing the Arrowverse thing in 2019, at the end of 2019, and got to it in 2021. I do get to stuff. The next thing I'm going to be listening to in audiobook form after I finish The Wheel of Time is Lord of the Rings. So you're welcome. I told you I have to do it, and yep. I'm going to do it. And this is the most successful and honest way that I can actually read, in air quotes, books these days. So I'm sure there's probably some really good dramatized versions of it, too.
Are you going to watch the new Amazon series?
Probably. Yeah, I mean, it'll definitely be going up on the Plex. Oh, that reminds me. Just gonna check. There's a Wheel of Time TV series, and I wanted to see where the progress on that was. I think it's probably not coming out.
How many culottes are gonna be
until how many what?
How many culottes are gonna be on that set?
What's culotte? What's culotte?
Skirts divided for writing.
Oh, I think they just call those riding skirts. How do you spell culottes?
C-U-L-O-T-T-E-S?
C-U-L-O...
T-T-E-S, I think. It's a plural.
Culottes. Okay. Okay, it's interesting because I think when I looked up riding skirts, it looked very different from this. A riding skirt, it was my understanding, was more like where the petticoats were... like pulled up for the middle, and there was a second, like basically like you wore culottes underneath that.
I see.
So you have like skirts over it, and then they like the petticoats are pulled up a little bit. So you still have a skirt on the outside, and then you have kind of like
it's a double
large legged pants. Yeah, yeah.
God, that sounds.
Anyways, nice. Probably a lot. That word shows up. You're making a joke, but yes, that word shows up so fucking much in there. Yeah. I wonder how far. So there's only 6 episodes in the first season, and it looks like they might be jumping way forward or something, because there's leave taking, Shadow is Waiting, Place of Safety, The Dragon Reborn, Blood Calls Blood, and Flame of Tar Valon, which, I mean, they don't even go to Tar Valon in the first book, I don't think, right?
Yeah, but Flame of Tar Valon might just be.
Might just be about Suwan.
Is that? I was thinking Moraine, but maybe.
The Flame of Tar Valon. I thought the flame specifically was the Amyrlin seat, but maybe I'm misunderstanding that. No, is that just their sign?
It might be
the
just
Flame of Tar Valon. Well, yeah.
Or Moraine could, like, burn a bitch.
Filming in Prague was halted due to COVID-19 in March, but had been resumed by April. So apparently it's slated for 2021 and was renewed for a second season ahead of the series premiere just a month ago.
Interesting.
So I guess it's happening. I just don't know when.
I wonder if they had Branderson on.
Did they?
I wonder if they did. It seems like it'd be a good move.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. Does Branderson do much stuff in the world of film and TV?
Probably.
He's apparently getting those Fortnite deals.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine he does as much as, you know, George Martin.
Let's see. No set release date. I bet it gets pushed. I wouldn't be surprised if it gets pushed until 2022. If we're halfway through the year and they I haven't even seen anything basically like mentioning it or you know, any sort of advertisements or teasers even, like, I don't think it's happening this year.
So let's see. Let me see if they got Branderson on. Wheel of Time TV series Branderson. Maybe I should put Brandon Sanderson.
Showrunner Rafe Judkins. I don't know what else they've done. Also, Rafe Judkins sounds like such a... he was a producer on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah, that tells me just about everything I know need to know. He was a producer from 2013 to 2015. And, like, yeah, even the imagery, like, there's no advertising material that's even come out for it yet. They're just using the default symbol of this, like, the Ouroboros snake, you know, wrapped through the wheel. He's also a writer on The Division, which is interesting.
Here we go. Sanderson initially commented that the TV show would have noticeable differences in the books, and then elaborated.
I assumed.
Hmm?
Oh, yeah. No, what's up?
This is a quote from Sanderson. I found the majority of these decisions to be excellent choices, things that will give the show its own soul, but will still feel in line with the tone of the books. I can't say for certain, but my instincts say the fan base will, in general, respond to them positively. There are a few I offered suggestion on, and we'll see. I can't say too much, not just because of NDAs, but also because the show is very much still in flux as person makes decisions on how he wants things to go. As the alterations go, I'd say they all fall in line with positive changes made in bringing Lord of the Rings to the big screen. Things that were altered in order to make the films work for the medium. Overall, the thing I'm most impressed with is this director, I suppose, who really seems to be guiding the show with a balance between love for their source material and his own creative vision. I'd much rather get this personally than something like the first two Harry Potter films, which felt like someone trying to bring the books to the screen with exact scene-by-scene recreations. I'm certain there will be polarizing decisions made by the team, but the changes are coming from a good place, and I really like most of them. And let me tell you, the first of the two scripts I read was sharp, excellent dialogue, nuanced characters, great pacing. The second of the two was in a rougher shape, so while still good, obviously was still undergoing revisions.
So this was Sanderson.
That was Brandon Sanderson.
Interesting. So he was writing some of the scripts. All right, that gives me a little bit of hope. I'll tell you this. I
don't think he was writing. I think he was just reading through.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah, I hope that one of the things that they revise somewhat is all of the blatant and rampant sexism.
Oh, yeah, that would be great.
That, I mean, or just like gender, culture, identity weirdness of just like, I don't know. When I first read those books, I thought they were progressive or whatever because they gave women agency and that was new to me in a sci-fi fantasy world.
I mean, which is true.
It's true. It does give them agency, but it also says that all human beings are either this or that. The fact that the like magic system, I would really like to see somebody who can channel and is like gender non-conforming. I would like to see them like explore that because I was thinking about that recently. I was like, this is it's just fucky when you have
cosmic forces associated with gender.
Writers get to act as God and then decide that, you know, the way that people, you know, that people are binary, you know, and this is like things that are very hotly like either debated or even just recognized and acknowledged, although not by everybody, by like, you know, the scientific community or whatever, just being like, this is how things are, and then can be incredibly offensive, seen as a different way or presented as a different way, like, you know, the binariness of gender. And then your entire world is built on that, excludes a significant amount of the population.
Yeah, it's like,
or the fact that, like, I don't know, all of the harem shit is never, it's never implied that, you know, wise ones or whatever who are married to the same chieftain are in sort of like maybe like a bisexual relationship with each other. There's never any like polyamory suggested between two warders who are bound to the same green Aja. Like, I don't know. It's just like, it's always, it's really weird, man. It feels very much just like Robert Jordan was Robert Jordaning his Robert Jordan worldview over everything.
Did he have a mustache? I feel like he should have had a mustache if he didn't.
I mean, I assumed he had a whole beard.
I could see him with like a full beard.
Rob Jert. I just searched for
Robert Jordan.
Rob Jert Borden. Robert Jordan.
Oh, God.
What?
Yeah. He's just George R. R. Martin.
Yeah, I know. They all just have the same look.
Why is he just George R. R. Martin?
I don't know. It's because he is.
At least he's like a bit more fit, I suppose. I got to give him that. George R. R. Martin, you know, is a little bit out of shape.
No, don't let that. As a person, you are a person who is out of shape. You should probably.
That's not true.
Be thoughtful. No, it's absolutely true. You're underweight, aren't you?
I have gained 9 pounds since I've been at home, so thank you very much.
Okay.
That's good. I'm Keep pretty that. Close, if not in the range. And it depends on who you ask whether I'm out of shape, you know, whether I'm underweight or not.
I just don't think you should be so judgy of people's weight. I don't think it's very fair.
Oh, I didn't say it's bad for him to be X. I said he
is. No, but the fact that you were commenting on it. I don't know. Anyways, we should probably figure out what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
I decided where I'm finally going to get that tattoo. It's not actually going to be on my...
thigh?
Oh. Yes, it is not going to be on my thigh. It's going to be on my shoulder right here. I feel like that's plenty of space.
Yeah.
It's big enough. It's nice and white. No, yeah, that's actually going to be... I'm going to be contacting my the tattoo artist I picked out, like, soon. Like, today, probably. Make it happen. I'll show up on the Twitter soon. I might actually just want to get it done before I leave for the Twin Cities, which would be on... Not next week, the week after that? Yeah. Should we figure out an episode, or is there anything else? I don't know. I didn't really ask you how you're doing or anything.
We just kind of
jumped into it. Yeah?
Yeah. How are you?
Doing okay. You've been reading on the beach?
I haven't been back to the beach this week. I want to do it, probably maybe do it either tomorrow or Tuesday.
How's the weather been?
Hot. Very muggy. Very hot and very humid, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been in the 80%, in 85-90% humidity here pretty much every day for the last like 2 weeks. We don't get the sea or anything though. We don't get an ocean or a gulf or, you know, beautiful sandy dunes. It's just fucking...
There's a lake.
Trees. There's not. I mean, the lake is like 3 hours away.
It's most of the state, isn't it? It's the lake. That's why it's named it.
I mean, yeah, but that's also where people don't live.
It's true. There's no houseboats.
There's probably some. Okay. What percent of the Michigan population do you think lives on houseboats? Now I'm curious.
I hope 0.0001%. I hope it's 10%. But it's not.
Like it's got a number in the low, like the low to mid hundreds in terms of Michigan here. How many houseboats on Lake Michigan?
I just like to think that there's like a lake town on Lake Michigan.
Houseboats and houseboats laws. This is one article from 2016. Here's one from... I have no idea, man. It looks like there's some Airbnb booking. You can spend $400 for to rent a houseboat for a night. That sounds nice.
Yeah.
The bathrooms on those things invariably always break.
Well, then you could just take a shit in the lake.
I'm pretty sure there's laws against that.
What are the police going to board their houseboat and fucking put you in chains?
Yeah, dude. They've got like dudes that drive around in boats or
making sure no one's shit in the lake.
Yeah. Yes, same people who are like preventing illegal fishing or like dumping or whatever. There's like a whole...
I think that's a form of dumping.
it's a whole arm of the law that
it's the arm that makes it slaps your ass when you try to take a shit. And it's like no.
Can you imagine somebody trying to take a shit in the woods and then somebody running up and trying to slap them on their cheek while that happens? That sounds awful on every level for everyone.
Yeah, it does. Hopefully, they're wearing gloves.
I touched it! Leather gloves or squirrel gloves?
Both.
Squirrel leather gloves?
Yeah. Or maybe they just like are gingerly holding a small squirrel like square of leather and are just rubbing it on the on the cheek. There you go.
Did you have anything in particular that you wanted to do an episode about to start with?
Nothing particular to start with. I have some ideas about things we should be doing in the interim.
There was one, somebody did a post on, there's actually a couple of, there's a Reddit post and a, and an email. Ooh, we could invest in Instahard.
Take pills?
Jumpstart your manhood engine using nothing but your brain. Is that? I don't actually know if that is then manhood pill or dick pills, because it's like, are you saying like your brain
You put the pill in your brain and then it gets a new card. I think that's what's going on.
Yeah, what are you feeling?
I've just been thrown for a loop by dick pills. One second, I need to reorient myself. Because like that's like a possible sponsor, Frank. You don't want to be selling dick pills?
I don't know if they're offering to sponsor us. I think they want us to buy dick pills. Sell us dick pills. Yeah.
Well, look, maybe we buy a bit and then we get the sponsorship. Maybe that's how it works.
We could just do an episode fully hard the whole time.
We've both just taken, you know, manhood engine brand dick pills, and let me tell you, our engines are humming for Halime.
It's our horniest episode ever.
Yep.
But the whole time we're just talking about fucking, I don't know, politics of some late Avum Quartus, you know, empire.